All right, for today's episode of Slinging It with QB Velocity, episode 4, we are pleased to be joined by Devin Gardner. Devin, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, no problem. Good to be here. Excited to talk some ball.
Awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Just a little bit of background on Devin. So he's originally from Detroit, Michigan, and had an amazing high school career. He was the number one dual threat quarterback coming out of his class. And then, of course, he went on to play at Michigan, had a great career there as a quarterback, played some receiver there as well. So, very excited to have Devin on the show today.
Yeah.
So, Devin, first question we want to ask you is, when was the first moment that you kind of fell in love with the game of football?
Probably say when I was 4 or 5. Maybe even 3. I don't know. My older brothers are significantly older than me. So when I was really, really little like that, they were in high school and playing peewee football and everything already. So they'd come home with their pads, and I'll put their helmet on. Obviously, you know, it's probably way too big. Even though I had a pretty big head at that age. I think it was the same size as this one. But I just vividly remember that. I have like pictures of it. And then I remember they were close to the same age, so they would go in the front yard and do hitting drills and stuff. And I just thought that was the most – it'd be so loud, and I thought that was the coolest thing ever, and I just couldn't wait to, you know, get my chance. Ironically enough, they both played defense, though, so – but it was around those ages that I kind of started forming my love for football.
Awesome.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. And I'm sure you, of course, looked up to your brothers, obviously, like you were saying. As a kid and everything, was anyone from either maybe your high school or your town or someone from the NFL from when you were growing up that you really looked up to and kind of wanted to eventually be like as a player?
Well, it's funny as you guys that when I was coming up, I always wore number 7 because I love Michael Vick. Right when I was 9 years old is when he was really popular at Virginia Tech, and he's running all over the place doing all this stuff. And so, but he's a shorter guy, right? And so by the time I was 12, I was taller than Michael Vick, right? And I did not have his wheels, right? And so I kind of had to alter what I thought I was going to be as a player. Just not nearly as fast. And I was already taller than him at that point. But he was my favorite player for sure. I love Barry Sanders as well. Got like old pictures of me in my Barry Sanders jersey for Halloween. But Michael Vick was my favorite quarterback growing up, even though at a point I knew that I could not do the things that he could do.
That's awesome. So when did you realize that you could go to school by playing football?
I don't know, because, you know, when you're a kid, and this happens now and forever. I mean, now it's a little different with social media, everybody kind of getting on social media. But back when I was a kid, it was just NFL, right? It really wasn't even go to college. It was like, I'm going to go play professional football. So I never really thought about, you know, going to college and playing football. But when I was 14, 15, 16, sophomore year of high school, I started getting recruited, right? Like seriously recruited. And that's when it kind of became reality. And I had a magazine with Terrell Pryor on the front of it. He was like number one junior in the country or something like that. And I'm like, okay, these are things that I can attain, right? Those are things that I want to do. And from then, I kind of thought it was really real and I really could do it as long as I work hard.
Awesome.
Yeah, definitely. And you just mentioned Terrell Pryor, who was, of course, a top dual threat coming out of high school. And you yourself, you're the number one dual threat in the country. So yeah. What was that like to be able to be, you know, ranked so high and be able to get on a bunch of college radars?
It was cool, man. I mean, because, you know, I thought it was a goal of mine to be the number one quarterback in the country and all these different things. And, you know, a lot of people, when you say something like that at such a young age, they're probably, you know, they laugh at you, right? They're kind of like, what? No way, right? You know how many people are playing quarterback in the United States of America, right? And so for it to be able to be realized, and obviously it's all opinion, right? So I was the best quarterback in someone's opinion. But for someone to feel that way about me, well, actually someone along with a group of others that would vote or whatever they do, I thought that was really, really, really cool, because that's like kind of your first dream that you realize. And it was a lofty goal, and I was able to obtain it. So I think that was, that was a really big highlight, you know, growing up, just getting a chance to, you know, see that and be that guy around the country. But the one thing that people don't realize, back then social media wasn't that big, right? Mm-hmm. It wasn't a huge thing like that. And so at my school, a small school, Inkster High School, nobody really knew I was that good at football, right? Because before I'd gotten there, they had a quarterback named Aaron Shavers, who I transferred into Inkster. So the quarterback before was really, really good, right? But he's a short guy, right? Not a quarterback that'll play quarterback at the next level, but very, very good high school quarterback. And so he was like, you know, the end all be all for quarterback and as far as everyone's concerned. And so when I got there, the whole thing was, you're pretty good, but you'll never be able to be as good as Aaron Shavers, right? And so like going through high school, nobody ever knew that I was like highly rated or anything. My teammates did, but like the kids in the school, right? My experience in high school was just a normal kid. I was just a normal high school kid. Didn't have to deal with all the like fanfare and things like that the kids probably have to deal with now. It all changed though when I played an All-American game on ESPN and everybody at the school saw it. So lucky for me, I was graduating high school early. So right after the All-American game, I went to college because it would probably have been pretty hectic in school and stuff like that. So I'm kind of thankful for that. But a part of me wants to know what it would have been like if in this era, like if I'm known quarterback and how people would receive that.
Yeah, and having all that hype and stuff.
Yeah, definitely. So what you just kind of mentioned, especially right now, how social media is so huge for recruiting and everything like that. So what advice would you give to, a young athlete who's going through that recruiting process right now?
You know, it's a great tool, right? Social media and being able to post your highlights and workout videos and things like that. You know, some people are like, man, I'm not posting all my workout stuff. That's fake. That's all. But a lot of that stuff works, right? Because especially in this COVID time where coaches don't get a chance to see you, right? They want to hear you throw the ball. They want to see, right, with video, not edited, not all that other stuff. And so it's good. It's good. But a lot of things I see as well is like, you know, people putting bad stuff, right? You put bad stuff on the internet, right? Stuff that's just mediocre, right? Yeah, I look at some of the young quarterbacks in different positions and it's like, that looks bad. Like, that's not something you want to post on the internet and let the college coaches see your weaknesses, right? You want to highlight the things you do well and let them try to pick out your weaknesses, but don't put bad stuff out there will probably be my biggest advice. And I mean, just go get it.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, you run your own training program, Young Go-Getters, make sure everyone goes check them out on social media. They're doing some great stuff. So for you, working with young quarterbacks, what are some of your philosophies, whether you know, mentally, and then maybe some different things for at the quarterback position that you really like to focus on?
It's so much, man. As you guys, I'm sure know, quarterbacking is the hardest thing you'll do in your life, right? And I kind of compare it to like a lot of grown men that have never been in a quarterback's fire or even trained to be a quarterback. These young kids will experience more adversity than those men a lot of times just because it's so hard. The grind of, you know, continuing to try to be perfect and try to be perfect and then you can't, right? And then you get that one that one sniff of perfection and you love it, but you can't really replicate it as much as you like to, right? Even Tom Brady, it's an interview that he did before the Super Bowl with Tony Romo talking about how he's dreaming about the perfect throw and people have no idea how often it does not happen. Right. It just doesn't happen. And so the thing for me, most high school coaches and little league coaches, when they see a guy that can throw a spiral or throw a nice fastball, they slobber all over. Right. They just get so excited. And so there's no correction. Right. So you throw a ball and it's halfway decent. Right. It's pretty good. It's good for your age. It's very impressive. And maybe it's just a tad behind the receiver. Receiver drops it and there's nothing said to quarterback. Right. It's all the receiver's fault. And so that's kind of the biggest thing with my program. I just try to make sure that they take responsibility, right? And try to be as perfect as possible because it's not easy running through the middle and having to adjust the balls and all these different things. And so I know that me coming up, I didn't get corrected a whole bunch. Coaches just aren't going to do it. And so I try to teach the young quarterbacks at all ages. You have a six-year-old who I'm teaching him the same thing right now. You have to find a way to critique and fix yourself, right? Because a lot of coaches have, first of all, they have like too much to do, right? They're coaching everything. And then you got a quarterback coach that's never played quarterback, right? So he's coaching you at quarterback, but he's just, I mean, you know, so it's really, really tough. But I think they're doing a good job. They're doing a good job of learning to coach themselves and learning to teach others how to throw, which if you can teach it, that means you know it more than anything in the world. So I have the six-year-old teach new kids that come in, a new 12-year-old. He's looking like, what? And I'm like, yes, that six-year-old's going to teach you how to throw right now, right? And so I think it's really cool, the dynamic that I have in the group. But, I think just the making sure you coach yourself and kind of try to critique yourself is the biggest thing, just because you can get so many reps at doing it wrong, right, when you're not around somebody like myself or like you guys that are being strategic and watching everything you do, that you will build way worse habits because you're just not with me enough, right? You're with your football team a lot more.
Yeah, I mean, that's some great points. I mean, I love that. I love that you're giving back to this next generation of quarterbacks too. And that's something that, you know, we really like what you just said about the self-teaching. I think that's huge because, like you said, you're, you know, a lot of these sessions, you know, maybe once or twice a week. But what are you doing with all that other time throughout the week? That's what's really gonna, you know, separate you as a football player and as a quarterback.
Yeah, it's kind of like being a parent, right? You know, you got your kid, but they're at school and after school programs and all these other places way more than they're actually at home, if you think about it. And so if you don't have that strong base of like, hey, these are things you shouldn't do, these are things you should do, right? They'll be easily influenced by others to do the wrong thing, right? And so that's kind of like how I think about with quarterbacking, where I'm the parent and you're not with me as much, but you are going outside and you need to be able to make good decisions and do all the right things when you're not around.
Mm-hmm. So now talking a little bit about your time at Michigan. So what was it like just to kind of be a part of the great Michigan tradition? We've had a couple of Michigan guys on our podcast before, and that's one of the things they absolutely loved was, you know, the tradition. So what was that like for you to be able to be a part of that?
Yeah, I mean, it's cool, man. Like I said, growing up, I didn't really think of, you know, going to college or anything like that. But as I got into the recruiting, right, and I'm getting Notre Dame and Florida and all these big schools, and Michigan really stuck out just because of the tradition. Like you said, I mean, I don't think there is a tradition, anything like it, right? I went over to Japan to play football, actually, a little bit. And when I went to it's really crazy. I went to the, the sports shop, like their version of Sports Authority or whatever. And so I go in there and nobody knows I'm there, right? I'm just there, like, you know, visiting, seeing if I would actually want to do it. And I walk past and it's like a caricature of me, right? And it's a Michigan helmet by it. And so I walk past and I'm like, wait, what? Like, no way. Not on the other side of the world, right? Literally on the other side of the world. Like, they know who Devin Gardner is. And it's not because I'm just so amazing, right? It's not because it's me. Right, not because I was birthed into this world. It's because I played at University of Michigan. So things like that are things you just don't get other places. It's tough. It's tough to get that other places, and they call it the Michigan difference. And the Michigan difference is real. It's a real thing. It's hard to explain, but you go to Michigan and you graduate and you do things right. Things will just seem to work out for you.
Yeah, definitely. And for you, what was it like to put on that, you know, that number 98, which I think you're the first guy in about 70 years that put that on.
Yeah, I mean, it's cool, right? Another thing that a lot of people don't even know how big of it's probably the biggest honor that you can get, right? Our first Heisman Trophy winner, his family asked me to wear the number, right? And he's obviously passed on, Tom Harmon, but Mark Harmon, his son, who is Gibbs on NCIS, a lot of people know him from that. And I know him from Freaky Friday, one of my favorite movies. Get a chance to meet that family and have that connection, right? I still text Mark today, like at any time, and he texts me back faster than a lot of my friends, you know what I mean? So, it's really cool to, and the kind of guy that Tom Harmon was as far as fighting in the war and being so tough. And they tell a story about how he played at Ohio State in the Horseshoe, and he got a standing ovation, right? He averaged 50 yards on punts and just all this crazy stuff. And it's like, wow, like this family thinks of me as that type of not only person, but that type of athlete that they want me to wear their father's number. And I just thought it was the coolest thing in the world.
Yeah, that's awesome. So obviously you can't talk about the Michigan tradition without mentioning the rivalry with Ohio State. So Can you like go into how the what the rivalry is like on the inside?
Man, it's so funny. It's a video that goes around the journey with Big Ten. They did something where they were in a tunnel one time. It kind of went viral where like Ohio State's coming up the tunnel right from their warm up or whatever. They're going into the locker room, and we're just happen to be coming out, and it's almost a fight. Like it's insane. If you haven't seen it, you should go watch it. I'm obviously not involved in all those shenanigans. I'm in the back somewhere, just getting my mind right. Lot harder job that I have to do than the linebackers and the corners that are, you know, talking right. Trash. But they call it the game for a reason, right? It's the greatest rivalry in sports, no matter what the records are. You throw them out, and you know, a lot of people say that with a lot of different rivalries, but like it's real. Like it's one of the more fun rivalries you can because we got other rivals like Minnesota and Michigan State, but it's a lot different, right? You play the last game in November, right? You had just had Thanksgiving, and then you go play this game, and everybody knows what it means, and it means so much to both programs. I mean, it's nothing like it in sports, I don't think, unless Michael Jordan plays like Kobe Bryant in the finals, but that can't happen. So,
and coming out of high school, going into college, what? Was the tradition really the key factor that made you pick Michigan over other schools, or was there any other kind of key factors as well?
Well, yeah, I think that was huge. That the tradition. I had a talk with my head coach, Greg Carter, and we kind of talked about Florida was a very viable option. Notre Dame has a lot of the same type of tradition, and the one thing that kind of settled it for me, he's like, hey, where do you want to live when you're done playing football? Right, I wanted to live here. Right, I always wanted to give back. Like that's my heart is giving back to where I've come from, and that's Detroit. And so he's like, where do you want to live when you're done? Whether you're a 12-year pro or you never play a snap in Michigan, where do you want to live and where do you want your name to ring? And I'm like, here, right? And so that was kind of like the deciding factor. Like I'm going to Michigan, no matter who the coach is. Even though I love Coach Rod, I'm gonna go to Michigan. And people ask me a lot of times, like, would I do it differently? And no, I'll do the same thing all over again.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's a great point of being able to go to a school with, like, would you enjoy that school without having football? I think that's a lot of young athletes when they're going through the process don't they don't keep that in mind. They're just thinking straight kind of football and not everything else.
Thank goodness Coach Carter for having a sane mind, because I probably would have been in Florida hot as heck. Jesus. Unlike most people, I enjoy the winter. Like, I need a break from being hot. I don't like being hot all the time. So.
Yeah, I hear that. And for you, your experience in Michigan, so what was your favorite memory that you have, a particular game, moment?
Had my first start in the Big House, where I almost lost the game and then got the game winner. My first start in the Big House, I mean, it was amazing. I had just come off a game against Minnesota, but it was away. And so, you know, I'm coming in after having this really good game, my first time ever starting a quarterback. And then we're playing Northwestern, who's playing really good, as they always are every single year. And we're always in a dogfight with them. And I'm playing well throughout the game. And I just make one mistake, right? I throw an interception late in the game. They try to salt the clock away. They have a bad punt. They punt it to Jeremy Gallen, but they like a line drive straight to him, which saves us some time. He runs a little bit. I think he gets close to the 50, not quite there. And then I've never completed a Hail Mary in my life, and I never thought I would. And then I drop back. I start to get ready to run, and I see Roy Rountree streaking down the middle of the field, and I chuck it up. And it's almost not even really a Hail Mary, because it was within the progression of the play. But it looked like a Hail Mary because the guy pass interferes, but they're not going to throw pass interference on basically the last play of the game. Roy Rountree tips it, and then he falls down and catches it. We go down, spike the ball, kick a field goal. And then in overtime, I get a game winner, get on the edge and get in the end zone. And, our defense goes out and gets a stop. So, and then it's so crazy because they carried me off the field and all this craziness, but they forgot I was the reason that we almost lost the game anyway. You know what I mean? Like, I threw that pick, yeah. But that's why I love football, man. It's all forgotten. If you do what you're supposed to do, everybody forgets that you're the reason we're in this predicament already. They're just so happy with the feeling of a victory and you know, coming together and things like that. And it's no other feeling that can replicate that. I just can't believe they carried me off the field on their shoulders when I almost lost the game, but it's all good.
So moving away from Michigan and into the league, what was your draft process like?
It was different because a lot of people didn't know. So my entire senior year, I had like torn ligaments in my elbow, my throwing elbow, right? So I had to wear this basically like a cast every single day in practice. It turned my skin into like scales, which was, I felt like a dang alligator. And so it would be, and with a lot of injuries, like some days it will feel fine and some days it will feel terrible, right? And some days it would be like, I can't throw at all. Right now I have to take all this ibuprofen and all this stuff all year, just things that you didn't want to do. And so after the year, right, I had to sit down and think like, man, what am I going to do? Because I can't play in the NFL like this. I can't, there's no way I can function with my arm feeling the way that it does. But I am a pretty good athlete, right? And I can still do something. And so I don't throw for the entire time, right? After my last game, I didn't throw a single pass. And I just worked at like learning to play receiver and things. I had done it before, but it was just me being a very good athlete. And so I go through it, and I, ironically enough, me and Tom Brady had the same agent. And I just told him, like, yeah, I'll try the receiver thing just because of the whole arm thing. And you can't go into the NFL with a bum wheel as a quarterback. And your wheel, obviously, is your arm. So I go do the receiver thing. And so I hadn't thrown in so long, right? So I'm with the Patriots. And then they have to bring a guy in, which, you know, as you know, it's a numbers game. So I end up on the wayside. But the next day, the Steelers pick me up. And so I meet with Coach Tomlin. And he talks about how he wants me to be slash, right? He wants to be the thrower, the runner, play some receiver, do all different things. And so I'm a little nervous about it at the time because I haven't thrown a football, right? But it's like riding a bike, as you know. You can always just get ready to throw. And in the Steelers, like OTAs and all these different things, I'm throwing. And I feel fine. Right. It feels like my arm is healed because I've given it so much rest. Right. You know, when you're in college, you don't get a chance to rest. There is no rest. Right. There's no off season. You know, as much as people think that you just get to be a regular person, you don't. You always work and lifting and throwing and doing these things. And so that rest was so good for me. So I was performing really well at quarterback and receiver. And that was amazing for me. But then obviously I got hurt and that kind of derailed a lot of that. But The draft process was a lot different for me just because I was kind of torn of like, I know I can play quarterback at the next level. That's no question. Right? I can make every throw. I can move. I can do all these things. But I'm going to be a lesser version of myself, and that's not going to be good.
Right. And, you know, talk about how while at Michigan you were willing to actually go play receiver, you were willing to go play on special teams where, you know, a lot of quarterbacks, they're stuck on just playing quarterback and nothing else. So what, you know, what was your mentality of actually being able to play multiple positions?
Well, so the way it came about was Roy Roundtree had gotten hurt, right? So I had already played 2 years. I was my freshman, redshirt sophomore. And so, or freshman year, whatever. I'm in my third year, but I'm a redshirt sophomore. And Roy Roundtree gets hurt. We're going to play Bama in the first game, right? And so Roy Roundtree gets hurt. I'm sick of being on the bench, right? I was number one quarterback in the country. I haven't played a single snap. This is insane. How am I not playing? Denard's playing out of his mind every single week. And so I go in the offices. And I'm, hey, I can help us play receiver. I'm not saying I'm going to be the best guy or whatever, but, you know, Rory's down, and I can pick up the slack while he's down because now, you know, at least you have a viable option. They're like, yeah. And I'm like, but if anything happens to Denard, right, I'm going right with the quarterback. There's no questions asked. I'm not here to try to play receiver. I'm just trying, you know, help the team by getting on the field. And that's how it happened. And then, you know, first week of spring ball, like I was going against a lot of the backups, right? Because the starters, you know, look at you, like you said, quarterback, like, what? I'm not wasting my time with, you know what I mean? And so I just destroy all of the backups, like just not even close, not getting stopped from catching the ball. I mean, it's fairly easy. And so after that, after the first week and a half, the next week after that, I started getting reps against the ones and things like that. Then I really started learning how to, you know, get open, you know, going against better competition, mm-hmm. things like that. And then I began dominating them as well. And that's how it happened. And I ended up being our leading receiver in yards and catches and, you know, touchdowns until I went back to quarterback.
Yeah, definitely. That's something that, you know,
I mean, a lot of credit goes to Roy Roundtree, though. Roy Roundtree and Jeremy Gallen really, really, like, taught me every single thing. And the thing is, for Roy, it's like you're actively giving catches out of your own hand to me by teaching me. And same for Jeremy Gallen, because we both played the X. Right. And so now Jeremy Gallen not only is taking balls out of his hand, but he's taking actual reps off the field because we both can't play X at the same time.
Yeah.
Right.
So now moving on, like passing out of NFL. So you went and you played overseas in Japan. Can you like what motivated you to go play over there?
Well, so I was talking to my agent and he just called me. I was set to go play in Canada, right? I was going to go play in Canada and, you know, get back to, you know, game shape, right? Learn. Get my legs up under me just because it's not as talented as the league, right? And so I can be 85% and still perform well and kind of work myself back in shape. And then he called me. He's like, yeah, these guys from Japan just call me or whatever. And I'm like, what, Japan? I'm like, oh, that's interesting, right? You know, at the least it's interesting. And so told me about, you know, what they had going and whatever. And, you know, he's like, the cool thing is they're going to fly you out tomorrow if you want, just to go check it out. I'm like, well, at the worst, I'm just going to go get a free trip to Japan, right? And I get a chance to see the other side of the world. And so I go on this long flight and I get there and I love it, right? I'm like, this is, and then I see the thing at the Sports Authority thing. And I'm just like, wait, what? This is something I could do, right? Because I'd never been out of the country. You know, I'd never been on, you know, trips and things like that, except for like football trips. Which is, you know, basically work. And so I'm like, I guess I could try this out for a year. I think this would be fun. I'll do it for a year. And then, you know, in Japan, it's kind of a prove it place, you know, where they give you, you know, they pay you early, but you don't get the real money until you prove that you are worth, you know, whatever you're asking for. And so the second year I was able to, you know, get whatever I wanted pretty much and perform well again. And so I think that was really cool, experience for me.
That's awesome, man. So obviously it's a lot different than playing over here. So what's the culture like around football in Japan?
Oh, they love it, man. Especially, you know, when I came there, right now they have like a real name, like a name. Like there were other Americans there, but like lower level that, you know, didn't really play on TV a bunch, you know, and talented players, but, you know, just not names that people know. And so when I went there, the buzz was amazing and you know, got all these Japanese kids wearing 98 shirts and different things. Like it's one of the best experiences of my life. I mean, you got all these kids who don't even speak English communicating with you through, you know, touch and, you know, different things like that. It's just like, wow, on the other side of the world. Right. And that's the Michigan difference, man. Like if I don't play at the University of Michigan, that kind of reception prop, because there are other Americans there and you didn't see the little Japanese kids running around with their numbers on, you know what I mean? And so I just thought that was really, really cool and refreshing. And not, I mean, nobody I know will get that experience, right? That's an experience that, you know, I'm going to be able to cherish forever. And it's really cool. Really cool.
That's awesome. So playing over there, and so, like, was there a language barrier? Like, how do you gel with your teammates there?
So it was definitely a language barrier. Right. They put me in Japanese class. So I could try to learn some Japanese. So I learned like numbers and things like that to call, you know, run plays and stuff. But lucky for me, on the team was a kid. His name was Yagi. He lived in New York for a long time. Right. So he was Japanese, full Japanese, spoke Japanese, but he speaks very clear English. Right. Like real English. And so he saved everything. Right, because now I can just be myself and he can relate everything that I'm trying to say and different things like that. And we were able to help teach the receivers and he was able to learn. It was a really cool experience. Thankful, you know, to him, because without him, I don't know, it would have been pretty, pretty tough to, you know, communicate not only with the players, but with the coaches, right, with you want. Because so a lot of the coaches had, you know, they spoke some English, but it wasn't really, you know, as good as you want it to be when you're being coached by him.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. So now thinking ahead now, thinking about, say, 40 years from now, right?
40? So,
yeah, thinking really ahead here. So what do you want people to be able to look at your legacy not only as a player, but now as someone who's developing, you know, youth athletes now. So what do you want people to, you know, be able to say about yourself?
Well, I mean, 40 years from now, hopefully I'm still, you know, walking around pretty good. Hopefully I'm jogging, right? I saw an old guy jogging at the track. Hopefully I'm jogging, right? Because I don't think I can jog right now. So hopefully when we get 40 years from now, I can jog. But, I mean, I want people to, you know, see me for what I say I helped, right? I helped others, right? That's all I wanted to do. And that's all I got a chance to do is help others no matter what. And, yeah, hopefully a bunch of the young quarterbacks that I work with now are professionals, right? And they can all, you know, tell their horror stories about how I was so mean and all these different things. And I'll probably not deny them. I'll agree, but look at you now, right? You know, so I think that's it, man. I'm not a materialistic guy. I don't need a whole bunch of things, right? I'm a servant, right? I'm here to serve others. Yeah. And I think I've done a pretty good job of that so far.
Awesome. Yeah, 100%. That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, that concludes the show. Again, yeah. Thanks for joining us. And guys, make sure to go follow Young Go Getters on social media and be sure to follow Devin as well.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it. You guys keep making those kids spin it, right? I see what you guys doing. That's good too, man. You need it, right? Quarterback play is huge, and a lot of times it's not very good, but there are talented guys that are kind of missing an opportunity to be talented quarterbacks because they don't have the right guys, you know, helping them out. And so hope you guys continue to do that up in New England. Hopefully you guys get down to Legacy here. Maybe I can get there a couple times, yeah. And we can meet and work with some young quarterbacks.
Awesome. 100%. 100%. That'd be an awesome collab right there. Awesome. Thanks, Evan.
Yeah, no